السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد
وآله الطاهرين. From tonight, for the next two or possibly three lectures, we want to approach the question of evolution. But the way I've decided to go through this, it's a very slow route or route. And we're going to start with a few preliminary points. And maybe from tomorrow we'll start. But these points are important to bear in mind as we progress. Chapter 4, verse 1. Ya ayyuha nas, O people. Here, nas being used in the absolute sense, be you male or female. Ittaqu rabbakum alladhi, have taqwa before your Lord, who khalaqakum min nafsin wahida, who created you, the people, male or female, whatever kind you are, your Lord, who created you from a single nafs. Now, nafs in Arabic, the nafs of something is its truth, or its essence, or its substance. Nafsu shay, haqiqatuhu, o dhatuhu, o aynuhu. From a single substance, from a single truth, from a single essence. Now what that is, we'll come to that. But we created you, people, from a single substance. وَخَلَقَ مِنْهَا زَوْجَهَا. And your Lord created from that very single substance, whatever it is, He created its spouse or its pair. So in male, with male and female, the pair emanate and are made from the same substance. Not that one of them is created in one manner and the other is created in another manner. Because when we say the word pair, and in Arabic the word zawj is used, the pair of anything, the two things involved, are on an equal footing. You know, a pair of anything, a pair of gloves if you want, a pair of pears, a pair of apples, a pair of humans, whatever. But in each pair, the two separate things are on an equal footing. One of them isn't superior to the other. And then Allah created its pair from the same substance. We're going to explain all these with time, inshallah. I just want to give a translation first. وَبَثَّ مِنْهُمَا, and then Allah disseminated, spread from those two, from the pair, رِجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً. He disseminated from that pair numerous men and women. Okay, now there's a reason why I've started with this verse to discuss evolution. Because we have to understand our own origins first a bit clearer, and then we can tackle the question of evolution better. Although I'm not claiming I'm going to give a 100% answer to the question of evolution. I can't make such a claim, but based on what scholars have said, some of them, and I'm going to share with you some very humble experiences, and inshallah it may be sufficient or not, I don't know. But so, our Lord created us, people, from a single truth, from a single essence, from a single substance. You male or female, whoever you are on earth, you all share a common feature in that you're made from the same thing. And no one can claim that they are made of something better than the other. This much we can understand from the Quran. And that's why those interpretations which say a female called Eve, alayhi salam, was created from the rib of Adam, this is not on a par with Quranic teachings. We have traditions on it. But when the traditions aren't on a par with the Quran, don't throw away the traditions necessarily. Rather, don't take the prima facie, face value of the traditions, and search for the esoteric meaning of those very traditions. The fact that Eve was created from Adam's rib, yes, we don't believe that. Shiism doesn't believe that either. The majority of Shias don't believe that. However, it doesn't mean that the story of someone being created from a rib doesn't have esoteric value. That's possible. But right now we're speaking about the superficial aspect of religion. Was Eve created from Adam's physical rib? We say no. And that's on a par with the logic of the Quran. They're from the same substance. Also, those interpretations of the Quran, those interpretations rather, of the traditions that say that Adam was created from a piece of clay, that which remained from the clay, Eve was made from that, that also is not on a par with the philosophy of pairing used here. Because when you have a pair, the two elements in that pair are on an equal footing. When you say a pair of gloves, these two gloves are exactly the same. It's not as if you have a piece of cloth, you make one glove with a piece of cloth and then that which remains. No, the two gloves, the same quantity, the same manner, the same style is used, and you produce two equal things. And then when you speak, if you speak to the two gloves and say, what was your origins? They will say, my origin is X centimeter cubed of this material. But it's exactly the same as the other glove too. That's the whole idea of pairing. It's not as if one is primary, the other glove is secondary. When you speak of a pair, the two involved are on equal footing. I'm sorry to stress these points, you know, but it's important as we progress. These points are of value to understand the issues clearer in the future. So then the question is, what is that substance then? Of which, be you male or female, the fact that you are Nas, you share this substance, what is that substance? And then it says, min nafsin wahida. It's a single substance. Now, superficially, the reason why single is used here, wahida, is that so, if it's min nafsin, khalaqa min nafsin, he created from a substance, maybe some people have said, okay, this human was created from this substance, that human was created from another substance. A kind of caste system would have entered its way into Islam. But this is making it clear, whoever you are, O man, O woman, O human, whoever you are, your origins, it's a single substance. And therefore, origins-wise, no one has superiority over another in relation to one's origins. All this is from the explicit verse of the Holy Quran. But still, a deeper understanding of what it means to say that Allah created us from a single substance, that's important. There may be some depth here. This can't be extrapolated directly and explicitly from the Quran, but it can be alluded to at least. To extrapolate it directly, we may need other factors to bring in before we make that final extrapolation. But what does it mean to say single? We said the nafs of any given thing is its truth, its essence, its substance. حقيقته, ذاته, عينه. Okay, but what is that? Right, in this world, that which is our substance in this world, this physical world, is right now when I say I am going to study, I am going to speak, I am going to eat, it's a combination of a physical dimension of me and a spiritual dimension. There's a body and soul here. The essence of what we are, or rather the substance of what we are in this world, it's a body and soul. The substance of what we are in the hereafter, there may be no physical body anymore. For example, in Barzakh, there's no physical body. There is a body in Barzakh, it's not physical. But our substance in this world, it's a physical and an immaterial aspect, which is the soul. Body and soul. Physical body and immaterial soul. That's the substance. That be you male or female, you're created from that. Right. So what does the term single mean here?
Not an IQ.
This substance that you're seeing is body and soul, at least in this physical realm. How do we define or interpret single, this adjective, when it comes after substance? And this is important now, because we believe that there's a unity, there's a oneness between body and soul. This is a very important principle that Islamic philosophers have, especially from Mullah Sadra onwards. But even before Mullah Sadra, it existed. And most important of all, it can be extrapolated from the logic of the Qur'an and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, and also from one's app. Now, I will speak about what this means, this unity of body and soul, but not right now, but inshallah we will speak about it. But these two, the physical body and the immaterial soul, yes, many philosophers before Mullah Sadra believe these two were mutually exclusive realities. As they call in Western philosophy, they believed in dualism. Dualism means that you have two mutually exclusive realities. One is a physical entity, one is an immaterial entity. One is a material reality, one is an immaterial reality. And they would say that material reality is just a means. It's like an instrument, like a writer and a pen. That writer just needs the pen as an instrument. But it's different to this immaterial, and that's what the I is. Our essence is the immaterial. That's how many philosophers would see this. But actually, no. The I, the essence of what we are, it's an extended creature which is multidimensional. It's one reality, though. It's not two mutually exclusive things. This one reality is multidimensional. It has a physical aspect, it has an immaterial aspect. And actually, humans, the physical aspect preceded the immaterial aspect. The immaterial aspect came into being 4 months into gestation in the mother's womb. Before that, it was something purely material. The embryo, the fetus. With the evolution of the fetus, at around 4 months, a soul arises. But that soul, the arising of the soul, is a product of the evolution of the matter of the fetus. It's not something outside the fetus. So, mathematically, evolution of matter, the fetus, over 4 months equals the arising of a soul. So what was a purely material entity, with its evolving over time in the mother's uterus, a soul arises, but not from outside. It's a product of the same matter which is evolving. And now that entity which was purely material is now a material dash, immaterial, multidimensional being. But the reason why this oneness of body and soul is so important is because a lot of the Sharia is based on this. And if we don't understand the oneness of body and soul, many things of the Sharia, we would say, well, we don't know what it means. Allah said we accept. And that's a good that's good to say that. Since Allah has said it, we accept. But it's also good to inquire and to know some reasoning, some wisdoms behind the Sharia. It may make you a better person. It may not make you a better person. But still, people are rational. You can't stop the rational mind wanting to know. With some people, if you just say, I'm not here, then just do it, it's not as easy for them to understand the importance of Allah saying something, you just follow it. Don't get me wrong, even if you follow it blindly because Allah said so, it has value. But that love of Allah is so much, it doesn't matter if you understand it or not. He said, therefore I abide. But still, for some people they want to know more, and it's good to know more. There's nothing wrong with that. Especially with the youth today, your children who are being brought up in a Western academic setting, in that setting which you've brought your children and put them into, they're taught to question everything and to know the wisdoms behind everything. So the way you learn to Islam may be different to how your children are learning Islam. They have a different setting, a different mindset. You can't expect them to think just like you. And after all, you brought them here. Now you've brought them here, at least give them that benefit of doubt. But you see, for example, the shaking of hands. Why is it haram to make skin-to-skin contact? If there's any kind of clothing or garment as a barrier, that's not haram. But why is skin-to-skin contact haram between the opposite sexes, assuming they're not mahram and so on and so forth? Yes, well here, why? If body and soul were two separate, mutually exclusive realities, then shaking a man's hand, if you're a woman, or a woman's hand, if you're a man, it's like two pieces of wood just touching one another. You're saying, if you were of the belief that the body is just an instrument, there's no unity between the body and the soul. The body is just an instrument, like a pen. The pen finishes, you can always get another pen, and so on and so forth. It's not in unity with your soul. Then shaking of hands would be just like that, two pieces of wood touching one another. So why is it haram in Islam? Because when two hands shake, two bodies make contact, the souls are being affected. And in this scenario, the souls are being contaminated. They're being polluted. There's a unity between body and soul. The soul is being affected here with this bodily contact. But the body is a dimension of the soul. The body is just a subtle physical manifestation of the immaterial soul. But they're in unity with one another. So with women, when it said, cover this part of the body, it's not as if they're covering something just physical. They're not doing it because there may be animals on the street and to protect themselves from animals. These may be wisdoms behind it. But they're doing it for themselves. Why? When they're covering themselves, certain parts of the body that have to be covered, they're covering their souls. And if they don't cover their souls, it will lead to a kind of audacity, boldness in the negative sense, before themselves. The soul becomes unchaste. It's a kind of humility when you cover your soul. When you cover the physical body, you're covering the soul. It has an effect on the soul. When you don't cover the physical body, it'll have a negative effect on the soul. Even if you don't see it right now, you'll see the consequences later when the level of pollution reaches a certain level. In men too, certain parts of the body have to be covered. For men, it's the beard, for example. And at the end of the day, this part of the face has to be covered. Having a beard is wajib, according to most Maharaji. It's just according to the definition, some people have defined the beard to lesser than the whole, this part, the facial area. Even on the chin, some of the Maharaji have said it suffices. But anyway, a certain part of this area has to be covered. And this is for the chastity of the male, for your soul. And there are many things in the Sharia. Even in modern medicine, this unity of body and soul is very important. I'll just give one example. You know, in organ donations, when someone is a recipient of an organ, and I don't want to speak about the ahkam of organ donation, we can speak about that another time, but it's particularly about this oneness, the unity of body and soul here. All this came up because of we were created from a single substance. But our truth in this world is body and soul. We're trying to understand this single wahida. What does it mean? In organ donations, when the recipient receives an organ from another person, let's say a kidney, why does the body reject the kidney? It rejects it. And that's why organ donation recipients, they have to take what's called immunosuppressants until the rest of their life, until the very end. They have to take immunosuppressants because their immune system does not recognize this foreign kidney, and therefore the immune system attacks it. And then it will lead to a bad reaction in the body. Therefore, they have to suppress the immune system, and the result is they can live. And they can benefit from that kidney. Now, I don't get into the medicine, but the point is, why does the body reject a foreign kidney? Look, if body and soul, they were two mutually exclusive things, if the body was merely a mere instrument, as philosophers before Mullah Sadra believed in, like a writer and a pen, for example. This pen, according to philosophers before Mullah Sadra, most of them, including Avicenna, the body was just an instrument. And then when the soul arises, according to that philosophy, they use the body as an instrument for themselves. And they become used to, become habituated with the body, and they control and manage it. But the soul is mutually exclusive to the body. So if that body was to be destroyed and another body comes, the soul there can, over time, become habituated with the new body again. Because it's only a body. The important thing, according to those philosophers, was the soul. The soul manages the body, but the body is a mere instrument. If the pen finishes its ink, then the writing catches another body, becomes used to it. Or for example, a drill, an instrument a carpenter has. He's used to this drill. The drill is stolen or it becomes damaged. When they purchase another drill, the carpenter can still use that drill, but it takes some time before they become used to it. They were used to that former drill first. So there's no oneness between body and soul here. But according to that, the philosophers who accept the oneness, those philosophers, such as Mullah Sadra, their theory of the soul can explain rejection. The theory of the soul that Avicenna and those before Mulla Sadra had, they can't explain rejection of that organ. Because if it's only a body, it's only a mere instrument, so why is the soul rejecting that kidney? At the end of the day, when we're saying the kidney is rejected, the soul is rejecting it. Why? Why should it be rejected? Why can't the soul just become used to that body over a period of time and then use that kidney? But we need immunosuppressants until the rest of their lives they need it. They never become used to it. The recipient of the organ, the kidney, they never become used to that kidney. And that's why they always have to take medication. Why? Because that kidney is not in unity with the soul of the person. It's not in unity with the soul. That kidney came from outside. Me, right now, all my body features are in unity with my soul. And this body is a product of my soul. My soul is generating my body moment to moment. And there's a unity between the generator, the soul, and the generated, the physical body. And you may say, okay, the soul came at 4 months. What about before that? There was still a body. Yes, there was a soul then too. It wasn't a human, rational soul. There was no me, but there was a soul then, which was generating too. We'll come to all that another day, but there's a unity between body and soul. There's a unity between me and my kidneys now. My lungs, my heart, my brain, my body. That kidney though, which I want to be a recipient of, no. That I am not in unity with. I do not recognize. It's not a function of my generation. And therefore I don't recognize it. And I'll never recognize it. And that's why immunosuppression is important. This theory of the soul explains this development in modern medicine. Whereas other theories of the soul, they can't explain these developments in modern medicine. We have many theories of the soul. I'm not claiming Mulla Sadra's theory of the soul is complete. Maybe in the future that will be rejected too. But right now it seems to be the best we have, especially when explaining these things. In any case, we have a single substance, which is our truth, our substance in this world. That is the body and soul, but it's a single substance. They're not two separate things. Okay. So here we see that, be you male or female, your origins are the same. One, creation-wise, there's no superiority with either. It's a pair, and with each pair, the origins are the same, the substance is the same, the essence is the same, and no one has superiority over the other, creation-wise. Action-wise, taqwa-wise, yes, that's a different story. The more taqwa you have, the more worth you have. The more worth as a human being you have. But when it comes on a creation level, no one is superior over another. Both are created from a single substance. So, in the verse which says, خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ نَفْسٍ وَاحِدًا, He created you from a single substance, that you here is a humanity you. Humanity stems from a single substance. Everyone is created from. But the first to manifest in humanity, the first substance to manifest, that was Nabi Adam. That was Adam, alayhi salam. That was the first manifestation, the first example of a human being. And that's why sometimes nafsun wahida, that single substance, they say it's referring to Adam. Essentially, it's not referring to Adam, it's referring to humanity and the fact that they were created from a single substance. But here, since the story of Adam wants to be opened up here, and the story of humans in general, it can be used as a misal, an application, an example of the first Nafsun Wahida. Otherwise, when the verse is Halaqakum, Allah created you, that you meaning humanity, humans, Adam is also one of them. But the first to manifest was Adam. And then the verse continues, خَلَقَ مِنْهَا زَوْجَهَا. Allah created from that very substance, that Adam was created, from that very substance, Adam's pair was created. مِنْهَا, from that single substance. The pair of that substance was created. The pair of anything shares, creation-wise, an equal sharing with its other pair. It's not that one is primary, one is secondary, it's a pair. It's not as if, as I said before, Adam was created and then from Adam, Eve was created. Eve being the pair of Adam. No. خَلَقَ مِنْهَا, Allah created from that single substance, which here is now body and soul, in the hereafter something else. But right now, in creation, we're only speaking of the physical realm of creation here, the physical realm of existence, because we're speaking about the creation of humans. And this principle of pairs is something which is very explicit in the Holy Quran, and this principle too makes its way in the Sharia in very interesting ways. For example, in the Holy Quran, chapter 36, verse 36, سُبْحَانَ الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْأَزْوَاجَ immaculate be he who created pairs, كُلَّهَا, all pairs, مِمَّا تُنْبِتُ الْأَرْضُ, from the things which the earth grows, وَمِنْ أَنْفُسِهِمْ, and from their own substances, their own selves, their own truths. This applies to us. From our own substances, a pair was created. وَمِمَّا لَا يَعْلَمُونَ, and things that they don't know yet. Today, medicine says that even in bacteria, there are pairs. Even in soil, there are pairs. And there may be things even right now that we don't know of. But everything is created in pairs. Everything. And in chapter 51, verse 49, this is explicit. وَمِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ, and from everything, whatever is a thing, be it a human thing, plant thing, animal thing, soil thing, whatever is a thing, مِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ خَلَقْنَا زَوْجَيْنِ, we created pairs. So there are pairs in any X substance, in any X nafs. And the pairs of any X thing, they're exactly what they are. They're pairs. They're equal. Neither is primary, neither is secondary. Neither is superior to the other. Creation-wise, they're on equal footing. And there are many other verses in the Holy Quran which demonstrate that. In the Sharia, this principle of pairs, I'll just end here and then we'll continue tomorrow. This principle of pairs is very important. And we see it in the Sharia when you want to choose your pair in marriage. It's called the principle of equivalence. When you have to find your equivalent, you have to find your pair. Now, I don't want to explain that, but equivalence has a set of criteria. There are about, let's say, 10 or 20 things which make someone your equivalent. And you may not find it 100%, but in that list, some things are more important to the person than other things. The Sharia, this is important for the Sharia. In marriage, find your equivalent. It minimizes future tensions. It maximizes salvation between the two of you. Yes, there are tensions in all marriages. There's no problem there. It's part of growth, part of spiritual growth. But still, for salvation, the Sharia at least wants to minimize certain tensions and therefore advises us, doesn't say it's wajib, to choose your equivalent. This stems from the principle of pairs. Because you know, with the story of Prophet Noah and bringing the animals in pairs, that was for the physical salvation of humanity, mankind, animal kind, and so on and so forth. But there is a spiritual salvation in the principle of pairs also. In the Sharia, that's seen in marriage. And we can speak about that. It takes a separate lecture, inshallah. We can, if you're interested, we can also discuss about that. Okay. Then the next question is that, was Adam, alayhi salam, created before Eve? It's an important question. Or was it necessary for Adam to be created before Eve? The answer, maybe no. Was it possible for Eve to be created before Adam? It was certainly possible. It didn't happen in this cycle. But in the millions, remember yesterday's speech? The millions of cycles since pre-eternity of people that existed, in the beginning of one cycle, there may have been a woman created first. Is it possible or not? Inshallah, that we're going to discuss tomorrow, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala tahir. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now, they said that people want to ask questions. Personally, I'm not for Q&As in public in front of everyone. And that's because of the experience I've gathered during the last few years. But out of respect, okay, today we'll do that. But I'm here for a month. Whoever has any question, first of all, after every speech with the brothers, I can go in that small room connected to the main salon here. We can go there and they can ask their questions, and the sisters another room. There's no problem. We can do it on alternate days. But the problem with asking questions and answers in front of everyone, first of all, it's taking people's time. People want to go now. But secondly, and more importantly, is that the level of knowledge between everyone here is a wide range. Someone may ask a question which deserves a difficult answer. That difficult answer can be problematic for someone else who didn't even ask the question. They received my answer though, and it may even confuse them more. So if I'm sensitive, there's a reason for that. But since you're used to that, I respect that, and we can go and try it and see if there are no complications, then we can continue with it. So, but let's not take people's time. I don't want people, they don't have to stay for the Q&A. Whoever wants to leave, please feel free to leave. I don't want to be a burden upon anyone here. Okay.
So, she's asking if anybody have a question for tonight only. More than welcome to answer.
No, we can practice it for other nights if you really insist. But I don't want, because of the insistence of one or two people, everyone having to stay here now. Because we can go in the room next door, and whoever has any question, they can ask.
Sure. Some sisters want to talk to you.
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
Go ahead, ask that.
Yeah.
Please ask.
You said that there were many cycles of humanity over and over. Now, this process, in each individual cycle, was Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam sent to each individual cycle? Or did each individual cycle have its own Prophet Muhammad and Ahlul Bayt? Or are we the only cycle that has Ahlul Bayt? Or is this even question even relevant to this idea?
Yes. No, every cycle had their own prophets, their own imams. We can't say that the Holy Messenger who was born 1400 years ago, we can't say that he was the same person, existed for previous cycles. because then that would be reincarnation, yes. Every cycle had its own imams, its own prophets. Yes. You see, now that much I can answer in front of everyone. Yes. Yes. Okay, thank you. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.